as kids are playing out their identities, as they're making these mistakes, and we encourage them to be curious. We encourage them to take risks and to find out who they are and to be, try on different hats as they're growing up, right? This is all part of what I want for my kids in their lives. I want them to explore, but how do you help them do this exploration in a way that doesn't have long-term consequences and have a negative impact on their future, you know, opportunities for college or career or potential, you know, partners or anything like that? Like, you do not want them to feel as if they misrepresented their own values in a public way.
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning Podcast. I'm Barbara Bray. This is where I have conversations with educators, leaders, and change agents about their passion to transform teaching and learning. Welcome, everyone, to the Rethinking Learning Podcast series. Today, I'm so lucky I have a conversation with Sue Thoughts. I don't know if you know Sue, but if you don't, you're going to find out how amazing this lady is. She is the Los Angeles Education Program Manager for Common Sense Education. And she works with districts to create a foundation of digital citizenship that fits with their vision. Thank you, Sue, so much for being here. I'm just really excited about talking with you today.
Barbara, I always love talking to you. I always love thinking about the things that you're thinking about and hearing your thoughts on them. So this is just as exciting for me, I hope.
Oh, no, it's going to be really fun. And, you know, we've talked before. You've told me a little bit about you. I'd like you to share what you've told me about you, your family, and your background. I was really excited about that.
So I grew up in Central Illinois, which is about as diverse as you might think Central Illinois is. And my mother was an immigrant. Right? She came from Okinawa, Japan. And I don't think I told you that before.
No.
My father was a teacher. He was an eighth grade English teacher. And we lived in this town of about 1,000 people. And my mom worked at my school. And I've been thinking a lot about this lately because she passed away a couple of years ago. And one of the things that I thought about is growing up as a kid, she grew up in Okinawa, right? Which is an extremely social environment where it's an island where everybody kind of takes care of each other. There is very much a sense of a strong social network among people who were living in the community that she was living in. And her being in this small town in Central Illinois, I'm sure was a very lonely place in a lot of ways, right? Being kind of far away from family and being far away from people that she connected with in the same kind of way. So I think as a kid, I always grew up, she was always reaching out to people and trying to make connections on a consistent basis, much to the embarrassment of me, I'm sure, as a teenage kid. And so at the mall, you know, she was always reaching out and trying to make community wherever she was and reaching out to the other folks that she thought might be a little bit aligned with some of her values, I think. And so, you know, being an adult now, you know, I'm much more social, I think, than I was as a teenager. But growing up, I think, in that environment, it really helped me to kind of think about the ways in which I make community and the people that I choose to be with. And I think I'm very much like her, trying to reach out all the time and make connections with people that I feel in community with. But my background really, you know, I ended up working at a Boy Scout camp for a long time as a kid. My father worked at a Boy Scout camp in Michigan. I was very much into science, and I got my degree in zoology and chemistry. I ended up working in a lab for a long time, in a biochemistry lab, in a molecular and cell biology lab, and then went on to do all kinds of world travel and wacky jobs that eventually led me into the field of public health, which eventually led to public health education and education research, and then somehow brought me on this wild path all the way to common sense education. So it is not a linear path by any means, but I think it really is kind of how I've been able to find community and how I've been able to find people that are like-minded when it comes to the ways that we see the world and the things that we feel are important and have value.
I didn't know that about your mother. That was new. You didn't tell me that. Growing up in Okinawa, it's so different than the United States. So it's amazing.
She's in a lot of my keynotes. So I end up talking about her and about how, you know, growing up in Central Illinois, being very, very outspoken and very weird, you know, if you are in a small town of 1,000 people, it's hard to find people who have similar values to you. And if I had had social media, if I had had the ability to reach out to people and find my identity and help me think about who I was, you know, maybe I would have made a lot of mistakes, but I think the advantage would have been that I would have understood a lot more about who I was. And I think I would have found myself a lot faster and maybe been happier, right, as a kid, instead of feeling like a person who doesn't belong in this community. And so I try to think about that a lot when I talk to adults who say all social media is bad or all technology is bad. And I, you know, I want to talk about how this could have really connected me. This really could have connected my mom, right, to find a community faster, whether it be a virtual community or in real life. I think that would have been really helpful to have that advantage. As it was, it took a long time.
Well, I think it took a long time for all of us, even if we didn't have the same experiences as you, because I was in the same, you know, I grew up feeling kind of like I didn't belong, but not the same way. And so you're right. Now we have those opportunities. So we have kids using technology all the time. And you mentioned Common Sense Media. Can you kind of, you know, I love it. I think it's an amazing resource. Can you explain what it offers for schools and even parents? Because I really think it's important for people to know about it.
Yeah. So we're a nonprofit organization, and we started about 14 years ago, built upon this idea that parents should have information about the kinds of media and technology that their kids were taking part in. So it was in response to a call for censorship, really, right? When a lot of folks were saying, these movies are bad for kids, this music is bad for kids, we should be censoring this. Well, you know, our founder, CEO Jim Steyer, who's still around, really felt strongly about, about the censorship issue and really wanted to introduce the idea of sanity, not censorship, right? Give parents the tools that they need in order to help make good decisions about the kinds of media and technology choices their kids are involved in. And so, you know, we started at rating media like books, movies, television shows, music, video games and such, and continue to do that to this day. But that was way before cell phones. That was way before all this technology is part of our lives all the time. And we have these fancy computers in our pockets. And as a response to a lot of the media and technology that parents are seeing in the lives of their kids, we also now provide a lot of advice and information for parents to help them guide their kids in a world of media and technology. And eventually, out of that parent advice, we started developing ideas to go direct to kids about the ways in which they should be using media and technology. And so we created this curriculum a few years ago, full kindergarten through 12th grade curriculum that centers on the concept of digital citizenship. And so really trying to help kids make good decisions, to be responsible and ethical and safe and kind and use technology for positive forces in their life and to help them as opposed to, you know, making decisions that could potentially.
I knew when Common Sense started in 14 years ago, I talked to some of the people there and it was just the right time. We needed it. And so now we need it more than ever. And one of the concerns, and I didn't talk about this with you before, but my concern is the digital footprint. And I know you do a lot of keynotes. You talk about digital citizenship. You know, do you want to just kind of expand on that a little bit?
About this concept of digital footprints?
Yeah.
When it comes to kids exploring their identities, right? As I was talking about earlier with who you are and trying to find out, you know, where your tribe is in the world and who do you want to be? That is all natural within development, right? We as kids are always trying on different frameworks and different ideas about the ways that we want to connect with the world and the culture that we want to be part of. And when you're a kid, you tend to take a lot of risks. You tend to, of course, not have that capacity to think about these long-term consequences for the decisions that you make. And when I was a kid, when you were a kid, we got to do this within the privacy of our own diary or among our peer groups, and none of this was, you know, out in the open for the world to see forever and ever. And today it's very different. And, you know, I think that as kids are playing out their identities, as they're making these mistakes, and we encourage them to be curious. We encourage them to take risks and to find out who they are and to be, try on different hats as they're growing up, right? This is all part of what I want for my kids in their lives. I want them to explore. But how do you help them do this exploration in a way that doesn't have long-term consequences and have a negative impact on their future, you know, opportunities for college or career or potential, you know, partners or anything like that? Like, you do not want them to feel as if they misrepresented their own values in a public way. So how do we encourage them to just be thoughtful about it? It doesn't mean that you can't explore. It doesn't mean that you can't say things that are controversial or risky. But how do you do that in a way that, you know, that you really can stand by 10 years from now? And it's really hard for kids to take that understanding and internalize that and apply it to their own lives. So I think part of what we do at Common Sense is really just try to help them think about things from another perspective, not just from their own. They're really good at understanding things from their own perspective as kids. How do we get them to see something from somebody else's point of view? Like, you know, like a college admissions officer or somebody who is looking at them from the outside in. And just remember that. Just plant that seed that other folks are going to look at you someday. And you need to be aware of that.
You put some quotes and I put some, you know, I want to just kind of say them because I think like one of them is, how can we create a culture that makes it easier for our students to make a good decision? So it's not just the kids making a decision. It's what we do as parents, teachers, and what kinds of culture do we create for them? Isn't that right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, my background, as I said, is in public health. And one of the big research projects that I was involved in was looking at the food availability within communities in Chicago and comparing them to different neighborhoods, right? And if I'm telling you to go out and buy healthy food and to cook healthy food for your family and to exercise and to do all these right things because that's what's going to make you healthy, but you live in a neighborhood where the food that's available is not what I'm telling you to buy, is not good for your family, is not affordable, is not available, you don't have access to this food, it's perishable, it's far away, it's hard to get to. You know, if that's the environment in which you live, how can I expect you to do what I'm asking you to do that's the right thing for your family? And so if I am a kid growing up in a culture within a school that values, you know, kind of a macho attitude, or, you know, you're all harsh to each other, or it's extremely competitive in the wrong kind of way. Or, you know, if these are the values that are exhibited in the culture of your school, then how do I expect you as a kid to be good to others when you're online? Right. And so in order to be able to have that expectation that your kids are kind to each other and that they are taking care of each other, you must create an environment in your school culture that makes it easier to live up to that expectation and make a good decision and make the right decision as opposed to the wrong one. You know, you don't want kids to feel like they're an outcast for being good, right? For standing up for somebody or for taking care of somebody. So how do you as a school make that an intentional value across your teachers, across your kids, across your parents, that we use technology in this way? We take care of each other in this way. And that is the expectation that we have and that we cultivate, as opposed to a very Wild West hands-off, like, you're going to be kids, do whatever you want, right? How do you intentionally invite that in your kids?
Wow, that's, I love the idea of intentionally designing. I did talk to Tom Murray, and he wrote a book on learning transformed, and he talked about intentionally designed schools. It's that idea of making the culture, and especially now with the beginning of school in the United States, and we're talking about doing that now. We have to provide the resources, provide the support, but also provide the guidance. So
yes.
You have another quote. I love this one. Kids aren't addicted to their phones. They are addicted to their friends.
That's not mine.
Oh, that's
not my quote.
Oh, I love it, though.
It comes from one of our students that was in a focus group that we did. It comes straight out of a teenager's mouth, and she wanted to convey, it is not this device that I love so much, right?
Yeah.
This device is a means for me to talk to my friends.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
It's not that I'm addicted to this device. I don't care about this device. I care about my friends and knowing what's going on and, you know, being involved in all of my friends' lives, because that's what I care about as a teenager. It's not the device.
And so you also said, and maybe this is, tell me if this is yours, about hope is not a strategy.
Yeah, I say that a lot. As I my boss, Jeff Mao, who was the director of the Maine Learning Technology Initiative in the state of Maine, the one-to-one laptop program. So when he is now involved in Future Ready and works with Tom a lot and goes on the Future Ready Summit roadshow all the time. So he was the one who really tried to emphasize that with me and saying, you know, if we want to convey to administrators or to teachers the importance of proactively going after this idea of intentionally creating a culture, we can't just sit back and expect our students to create that culture for themselves. So that's a huge part of what I try to convey to administrators and the teachers, is that if we are not doing our part to intentionally create that culture and guide our students, then we can't just sit back and hope that everything will be okay, right? I equate it, and this is my public health background again. I was really involved in adolescent health, and I think a lot about sex education, right? And adolescent health and the things that we expect our students to do behaviorally. And, you know, we have hopes for what they do that's going to take care of themselves and be healthy. But if we're not willing to step in and make that explicit recommendation and guidance and give skills and do the things that we need to do to educate our kids in a meaningful way and not just slap a poster on the wall. I'd slap a poster on the wall and say, don't get pregnant, right? You can't just hope that all your kids, you know, will take that to heart and say, she's absolutely right, teacher. Oh gosh, now that you say that, I will not get pregnant, right? If we slap a poster on the wall and say, don't cyberbully anybody, right? Like, that's a bad thing to do. Or think about your digital footprint, right? That's one way to, as a reminder, but without the skills, without the why, without the development of those abilities and the reasoning behind all of that, you know, without creating that culture, you can't expect this poster to be your strategy, or you can't just hope that things work out and that everything is going to be okay.
Wow. I love what you're saying, because I walk in the room, I see posters all over, but they don't ever talk about some of these things. So, you know, one is the privacy, one is also preparing kids. You know, and since you and I use social media all the time, what about kids on social media? What kinds of suggestions would you have for that?
So we do a lot of advice when it comes to using social media. I have two kids, by the way. So maybe this will be, this is coming from me as a parent and maybe not so much me as a common sense person, because I think it makes it easier to conceptualize if you're doing it from a personal perspective. So my daughter, she's a reader. She loves books. She loves fan fiction. And she wanted an Instagram account because she knew that there were other people online who loved Harry Potter, Percy Jackson, you know, this whole crew of people, right? There's a whole world of fans out there, and she wanted to connect with them. So this was when she was, I think, 11 or 12, not quite old enough to officially have an Instagram account. And so I thought, you know, that's a really good reason for her to be on social media, is to connect with other fans, to further deepen her love of reading. And, you know, that's proving that she wants friends, not the technology. And so I believe that in her. And so the way that we did this was, I had the Instagram account as a parent, and she was allowed to take control over my Instagram account. And she posted on it, right? And she was following people who were all involved in the fan memes all over the place. But at the same time, I had access to this for a couple of years while she was navigating the waters of Instagram. And it allowed me to kind of, you know, she knew that I could look at it. But eventually, you know, it allowed me to see posts that were on there and say, what do you think of this, right? This is kind of questionable. You know, it's kind of controversial. I see something on here that's potentially, you know, not exactly in line with our values as a family, you know, and I'm not accusing her. I'm not judging her. This is actually not even her post, but, you know, how do you feel when you see something like this? Or is it okay to take somebody else's picture and make a meme out of it? What does that mean for them, right? And so it allowed us the opportunity to play with this and think about it and ask a lot of questions for a couple of years before I said, okay, this is your Instagram account now and you can really take off. You know, I'm not going to be involved in this. I'm going to check in every once in a while and see how you're doing, but really now this is yours, right? So I think that modeling and those ideas about, you know, it's set to private, right? Nobody can follow her unless she approves them. These are the kinds of things that we talk about at Common Sense, about maintaining your privacy, not joining every single app that there is out there just because it's free or just because it's the latest thing. What kind of information are they harvesting off of you? I know this is not something that regular kids think about, but I want them to know that it's free for a reason. You know, there is information that is being collected and pulled from your data, and somebody is making money on that, right? So every time you're using Google, as we're sitting here, you know, on our fancy Google devices, there is information that's being pulled and money being made on that. And what do you, as a citizen in today's society, need to think about that?
I mean, you know, when you're talking like this, I'm thinking of, I know some teachers that have Twitter accounts for their classes. I know some that even let kids have social media in the classroom, and parents don't understand it. So I'm just curious how you get parents and teachers involved giving that same information that you just mentioned for your daughter. That's really wonderful, kind of giving them a way how they can test the waters first.
It was just really about having the conversations. I mean, it was a context for asking questions that were relevant in the moment. Like if I sat down and I, you know, I can lecture my kids all day long about privacy, about digital footprint, and it's all abstract to them, right? It's not something that's relevant to what they're actually doing with their phones. But if I can ask the question in the moment while I'm looking at the phone, and with the understanding that I am pro social media in a lot of ways. I love it for myself. I use social media to maintain friendships and connections with people that I very much hold dear all across the world. And I love being able to see my cousin's babies in Japan. I love being able to see all of my friends who went to see the eclipse yesterday and their reactions and their emotions. Like it brings me to them in a way that I would not otherwise be able to do, and in a very easy, convenient way. So I hope that I'm modeling this good behavior for my kids. And I hope that teachers, when they have social media accounts, oftentimes with Twitter, I love Twitter for teachers and I love Twitter chats and I love the community that's formed when you have a Twitter chat. And I love the resources that are flying around and you are learning so much every single time you go on and you are, you know, connecting with somebody that you totally admire. And it's so fun to be modeling that constant learning, sharing, connecting, community for your students and hope that they're absorbing some of that too, right?
Oh, I love that because that's how I met you, really. And the connections that we make, they're key. And you mentioned some in your talk, and also when we've talked before, is about establishing a culture of support. And so maybe what I'm looking at is using some of the resources that you mentioned and maybe some links, we can write about some of the ideas there, because I think it's really important for, I have a granddaughter who loves Minecraft and she's online and I get a little concerned. What do we do? What does a parent do? What does a teacher do? Because they know, and then also getting teachers online. So this idea of a culture of support is really important.
I agree. So are you thinking more about support for your granddaughter or are you thinking more about support for the parents and the educators around her?
All of them, because I know what to do with my granddaughter, but I don't want to step over what my daughter and son-in-law want to do for it. So there's a mutual respect and trust that you have to build, but you also need to, like you mentioned, the idea of what happens to your information when it's online. I don't think people realize that. And so, you know, for me, I'm going to have to go back and look at some of the things on Common Sense Media now just to see what I can give to schools and share with and maybe point them in your direction. And I know, are you doing the work with Future Ready also?
So I just attended Future Ready in Palm Springs a couple of weeks ago. And I was there as a fly on the wall, right? And I'm there to kind of listen to what districts are concerned with and why they're there and where they're going and what their hopes are. Because those are the districts that, those districts that choose to attend and are able to attend and commit to this concept of Future Ready, I think are the ones that are, they are the pioneers. They are the ones who are forward thinking. They want, they desire, and are passionate about creating an education for their students that is meaningful. And that is, you know, that's a place where I want to be personally. I want to be in that room with all these great leaders who are doing amazing things and are taking that risk and aren't afraid. Those are my people, right? That's who I want to be in the room with. And I want to hear their worries so that I know, you know, what kinds of things I can say to help them out or what kind of resources I can use to help them out in some way as they are getting ready to, you know, to walk into this with, you know, with their teachers. And I also share the same values, you know, that Tom mentions a lot around creating those relationships and really valuing people and building that trust among your team so that you can all walk in this together. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that it's like going to church for me in a lot of ways, right? Like, that's what reaffirms my idea about what I want education to be and where I want it to go and who I want it to be for, right? These are for our kids. We're trying to make a fantastic environment for our kids. And these are the people in the room who are thinking about how to do it. I want to be part of that conversation. And so even though I'm not able to go to every single Future Ready across the country, I'm so happy to know that some of my team members are going to be at every single conversation across the country with all of these summits and are part of that conversation, because that's important to us as Common Sense Education. And that's important for us to be able to share our resources with those educators that are able to make it and choose to go. So I'm so pleased.
That is so exciting. In fact, I'm thinking that what we'll do is we'll have to have you come back. So I think after you start going to all of these and we may be pulling some specific ideas to help people, because what you've done is opened a door to help people understand that it's social media and being online. It doesn't have to be scary if you know how to protect yourself. But you also need to understand what's going on there. And so you really, really helped me understand a lot. So I just love today. This was, I learned
some. It's so fun to talk to you.
I know. Yes. I learned so much from you all the time. Every time I talk to you, there's something new. And I don't know if it went kind of quick that you were a biology, zoology major. And ended up
did
in
a lot of
public
research.
Health. I mean, there's a lot of things and a lot of dimensions about you that is just wonderful. So, Sue, thank you so much today for sharing. And what we're going to do is we're going to make a blog post together. We're going to put in the resources and we'll share a lot of the things that you talked about today. So thank you so much. This was fun.
Well, let me know. Let me know how I can support you in the great work that you do anytime. I mean, you are one of my favorite educators. You are one of those forward thinkers, and you are one of those people who are constantly learning and asking the right questions that get at the heart of what we all do. I mean, I think that's why I love listening to the podcast. That's why I love to read the blog. You are trying to go out I think, you know, partly for yourself, right? To go out and dig up these little nuggets of gold all across the country. But, you know, so you're modeling for us what it means to go out and find your connection with other people. And what is it that you want to highlight and promote? And, you know, this is an opportunity for all of us who are honored to be able to be part of this. Aww. You know, this is a great opportunity for us, but also we're so happy to have you be part of this whole education community and leading the way.
Oh my goodness. Now I'm blushing. I'm really, that is so sweet. No, I'm doing this because one of the things I'm a connector like you are. And I find that there's a lot of things that when we are doing some of our Twitter chats or other kinds of conversations, things don't come out like this. And that's why I wanted to do conversations on learning and try to get to the heart of why people are so passionate about it. So Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you so much. Take care.
I will. And thank you, everyone, for joining Rethinking Learning podcast today with Sue Thoughts. What a wonderful conversation. Thank you, dear.
Too much fun. All right.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Sue Thoughts. Make sure you visit BarbaraBray.net to learn more about Sue, her work at Common Sense Media, and all the other amazing things she does. We'll be creating a blog with the links and resources, so you'll be able to check on that. So please subscribe so you can join the conversations.